Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Osama bin Laden's demise will go down as a defining moment in the American fight against terrorism, a symbolic moment of retribution against those who attacked New York and Washington on September 11th, 2001. President Obama last night said that the leader of al-Qaeda has been killed, but the threat is not over.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda. Yet his death does not mark the end of our effort. There's no doubt that al-Qaeda will continue to pursue attacks against us. We must, and we will, remain vigilant at home and abroad.
So the threat is not over, and will this turn bin Laden into a martyr and galvanize his followers? Are we safe yet? Coming up this hour, we'd like to hear from you. What does it mean to you to know that the terrorist bin Laden is dead? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also this hour, we'll hear from Sean Kay, foreign policy expert and a professor of politics and government at Ohio Wesleyan University. He's also an associate at the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at OSU. Joining us now is Richard Herman. Rick is the director of the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at Ohio State University. His areas of interest include American foreign policy and the politics of the Middle East and Russia. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Welcome, man. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Is this the end of anything at this point?
Well, it's the end of Osama bin Laden and his life and his leadership within al-Qaeda. I think, as President Obama said, that's a very significant development. I think it's a real blow against al-Qaeda. I don't think it's going to change the war in Afghanistan. It certainly has not been the case that he's been protecting the Taliban or Pakistan, so many of the problems we face in Afghanistan will go on. On the other hand, he has been a tremendously important symbol of al-Qaeda and, of course, its leader. And I think his departure is a very, as the president said, the most significant accomplishment in these last 10 years of the American war against al-Qaeda.
How significant was his leadership role at this point in al-Qaeda? Was he still a guiding force, or was he largely a symbol as we all viewed him?
Well, I wouldn't minimize the importance of symbols, even if he wasn't the day-to-day commander of every operation. I think the idea that he could remain independent of the United States, stay alive for so long that it looked as if he was more powerful, I think, than he actually was. And I think that gave a sense to al-Qaeda followers that maybe they could be more powerful and more efficacious than they actually can be. And so I think, you know, taking that symbol down is not a small matter.
He was found not in a remote part of the country in Pakistan in a cave somewhere. He was found in an urban area, in a highly populated area in a town called Abbottabad. What does that say about Pakistan's commitment to anti-terrorism? There have been lots of doubters about it out there.
There have been, and one of the reasons there have been is that we suspected he was in Pakistan, and it seemed to stretch credulity to believe they couldn't find him or didn't know where he was. As I said, I don't think the Pakistanis or the Taliban have been protected by bin Laden. I think it's the other way around. Mm. I think there's a backstory here that I don't know yet. I suspect someday will come out of what Pakistan's relationship with bin Laden is or was, and who in Pakistan helped the Americans, if anyone, find him and bring him to justice this last looks like 7 or 8 months that the president mentioned they've been tracking him now. And what exactly changed? I know that President Obama put a much higher priority on capturing him, and there's been a lot of tension, obviously, in the U.S.-Pakistani relationship as Obama has escalated his efforts, the U.S. efforts in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. So my guess is, some of that produced cracks within the leadership in Pakistan, and someone agreed to help in a way they hadn't before.
Osama bin Laden is dead. The president of the United States announced that late last night. My guest now to talk about that is Richard Herman. He's the director of the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment for Rick, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Anthony in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I just want to, I mean, I'm not sure exactly where your conversation is going to go because you just started, but I want to point you to Lawrence Wright's 2006 book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, in which it's a great book, wonderful surprise, that it makes clear that Bin Laden was never much but a marginal figure in Al-Qaeda, that he became a spokesperson and kind of the face of the organization because he had the money. He had the money that funded what they did. Furthermore, and it's not like the CIA, the Pentagon, Justice Department, and so forth don't know this, but this is an organization that doesn't run in kind of conventional bureaucratic ways with the structure creators at the top and people who report them below. It's much more diffuse than this. Over the last 10 years, we kind of promote the idea that it does look that way. I say, we captured the number two, the number three, the number four leader of Al-Qaeda. It's not an organization that works that way.
Anthony, we have really bad sound with you, so I just want to move on. But I get your basic point, and thank you so much for calling. Was he, Rick Herman, a marginal figure in the final analysis in Al-Qaeda?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think it's true what Anthony said, that is, it's a network, and it has numerous groups, and not all of them very highly coordinated. Osama bin Laden was not someone who insisted on a hierarchical power that emanated from him. He allowed people with many different points of view to use the Al-Qaeda mantle, and he was, so it is right that it's more of an amorphous network. I think, as President Obama said last night, the war against terrorism is far from over. The war against Al-Qaeda will go on. This isn't the end of the organization, but I wouldn't think that he's marginal. I think that's going much too far. We can recognize that it's decentralized, has many cells. It is a very loose kind of organization. If it's even an organization, it might not always be the right word, because many of the groups that are called Al-Qaeda, like that which grew up in Iraq, some of those that might now be in Libya, I've always suspected are not connected to Osama bin Laden in a direct way, or not like in radio contact taking instructions from them, but more fighting in the spirit and the sort of for the same kinds of symbolic gains and grievances that Osama always symbolized. But I also think it's important to keep in mind where I think Osama bin Laden has been greatly exaggerated is in the Western mind, in the sense of how many people in the Middle East followed him. I think, he's been perceived in much of the Arab world, most Arabs, as a criminal. I don't think he has a huge following among Arabs. I don't think he has. I don't think he's a hugely populist leader. He's not a Nasser of 30 years ago, where you in your opening were wondering whether there'd be tremendous backlash in the Arab world over this. I don't think so. I think, sure, those in his network who mostly are criminally committed to violence, and that's a very tiny fraction of the population there, will be galvanized to some degree. But I think it's much more sensible to see this as a criminal organization of relatively small numbers and a small sliver of society than a big mass populist movement like we've seen recently in Egypt, or we're seeing today in Syria, or we've seen not long ago in Tunisia, or we saw a year and a half ago in Iran. That's never been the kind of mass following that Osama bin Laden said. He just doesn't have those kind of mass organizing charisma. And that's why, in a sense, and Al-Qaeda has been a non-element in the Arab Spring. It's just been invisible in Egypt or Tunisia. It's more or less invisible in Libya today, or in Yemen, or in Bahrain. It's because other forces that really do have what I'll call political legs in the Middle East are vastly more important than Al-Qaeda.
So then what is likely to happen to Al-Qaeda now? Is there another group that will step forward as more prominent force?
I don't think so. I don't think any single group. I don't think Al-Qaeda would have achieved the status it currently enjoys in the Western psyche but for 9/11.
Right.
And so it carried on one spectacularly successful attack. And with that, of course, for good reasons, I'm not minimizing that, secured a position in the American psyche completely out of proportion to its actual political weight in the Middle East. I don't see, yeah, sure, there may be other criminal groups that come up and try to carry on activity. There are many of them now. The Haqqani group in Pakistan is already there. There are groups within Afghanistan. There are groups today in other parts of the Middle East, but they are perceived, I mean, they don't even come up onto the public opinion radar in the United States because they're seen as small criminal gangs, and Interpol and local police go after them, put them in jail.
If you want to give us a call, you can go to 614-292-8513. We also welcome your emails at allsides@wosu.org. And Crystal in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine was talking about the bin Laden death this morning, and she said, you know, this is something to think about. Of course, I've been working and have not been able to do my own research, so I really am curious to see what feedback I do get about this, but she had mentioned about the oil prices and gas and how we really hit an all-time high this past week and gas prices and things like that. She had mentioned that those were starting to go down and decrease and, you know, pointed to the fact that maybe all of this is politically motivated. And, you know, as soon as I saw it on the front page of the Dispatch, I was like, you know, there was just something in me that had a doubt, you know, and then I hear he was buried at sea and, you know, I'm very, very suspicious of all of this. And so I'd like to know some feedback as far as that goes.
Yeah, Rick, we also have an email from Aaron. Thank you very much, Crystal, for your call, that asks, why would we bury Osama bin Laden's body at sea in a world where our president was cajoled into presenting his birth certificate? Dumping bin Laden's corpse seems to come across as either boneheaded or a cover story. What were they thinking? He says, P.S., I'm not a bloodthirsty man, but I am sincerely glad that he is dead.
I don't know exactly how to react. I'm taking the president at his word, and I'm assuming he has, you know, the evidence to support his announcement. I presume there will be, you know, DNA evidence, and there will be other kinds of evidence if, you know, that's required for, you know, a skeptical foreign audience. I don't know the operational details here. I don't know if bringing his body back and putting it on display would have been a smarter tactical move, or if that was even politically possible. These are, as I say, there's a lot of backstory mm-hmm. to this that we're going to get over the next probably several years, to be honest with you.
It may be
a long time before we really know. But at least today, I'm not doubting that what the president is saying is true and that they killed him. I don't think he just made this announcement for political reasons. The risks of that would just be too high.
As far as burial at sea, could it be religious?
Well, I don't think they wanted to give them an opportunity to bury him and create a shrine. I also think in some ways by not allowing them the body, they can't carry on the normal Muslim practices of burial, which, you know, in some ways is a retributive sense of justice. You don't even give his followers what to do they might want in terms of burying their fallen leader, but he just disappears as a non-entity. So in many ways, that's an insult to his leaders or to his followers, I mean, and you know, deservedly sent.
Okay, we have to stop right now, and we'll return and continue our discussion about the death of Osama bin Laden. My guest is Rick Herman. He's director of the Mershon Center for International Security Studies. What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Stay with 89.7 NPR News throughout the day. We'll have special coverage from NPR beginning at 11 o'clock and through the rest of the morning. Special coverage continues of the death of Osama bin Laden on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting their annual Center Stage Gala with New Orleans' first family of jazz and blues, the Neville Brothers, Saturday, May 14th at 8 p.m. at the McCoy Center in New Albany. Details and tickets at mccoycenter.org.
Rain is expected off and on throughout the day today and a high near 60 degrees. Rain tonight and a low of 44 degrees. More rain for Tuesday and a high of 50. There is a chance of rain Tuesday night as well and a little colder, a low of 40 degrees. Currently 58 degrees in downtown Columbus. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. Osama bin Laden is dead. The president announced it late last night. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Rick Herman, he's director of Mershon Center for International Security Studies, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Obama says the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam.
I've made clear, just as President Bush did shortly after 9/11, that our war is not against Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. He was a mass murderer of Muslims. Indeed, al-Qaeda has slaughtered scores of Muslims in many countries, including our own. So his demise should be welcomed by all who believe in peace and human dignity.
Rick Herman, I heard this morning that this is not necessarily going to change minds one way or the other in the Arab world. Folks who were opposed to American foreign policy will still be opposed to it, but it won't turn anybody one way or the other from where they were.
That would be my view, too. I don't think this is going to make more people more anti-American than they were or any less. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think bin Laden didn't cast nearly as big a shadow in the Middle East as he did in the United States, ironically. And I think his death will be seen as, you know, at some point inevitable. As I said earlier, and I still think that it'll diminish the perception that he had previously of some invincibility or invulnerability, as has some other al-Qaeda leaders, and, you know, further weaken. And that's why I mentioned, I don't think this is a small matter at all. I think it's a very significant accomplishment in terms of eroding their sense of invulnerability and invincibility, and further, I think, convincing other Arabs that this is a very marginal group.
Thomas in Clintonville, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hi, Ann. Let me preface this by saying I'm 43, so I'm a little older, but I live in the campus area. I'm a two-time veteran of both Gulf Wars, once with the Marines and once with the Army Reserves. And my concern actually is more internal. And my question is there a concern about the fact that college campuses and younger people in particular are reacting in a way that is almost third world, in the sense that there is triumph, like a sporting event or championship was just won, instead of, and these are kids who grew up with this but were not, did not experience 9/11 directly, mm-hmm, as adults. And there's an ideology that's being created by this mystical character that's now dead. And the people that seem to have lived 9/11, they certainly seem to be a little bit more tacit and reserved in their reaction. And I think that's wiser. I use a football analogy. You know, act like you've been there when you get to the end zone. And I'm especially concerned that the people that seem to be boisterous about their celebrations of this, you know, tragic event, are people that really grew up in the shadow of it as opposed to experiencing it directly. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Rick, how does something like that, those kinds of celebrations outside the White House late last night, perceived around the world, or does it really matter?
I'm with the caller. I've been very surprised. I wouldn't have expected this kind of what looks like spontaneous and often youthful outpouring. I didn't realize how much gratification they would take from killing him. And it is almost as if we've scored a big touchdown and they want to cheer. And obviously it is an important accomplishment, and the people who conducted it, I'm sure, did it with enormous professionalism. But I have been surprised. I didn't think it would. I think everybody was going to say, you know, mission accomplished on this one particular score. and it's an important one, but I didn't anticipate this, and I've been surprised, just like the caller, that there seems to be, I don't know how widespread it is. I don't know if it was just last night around the White House and then other students watching got the idea that, or if it was just here at Ohio State, or whether all campuses have seen this kind of sort of cheering.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. It'll be an interesting story, but I agree. It's surprised me. I wouldn't have anticipated it. And I don't know exactly what to make of it.
What does it tell us about that generation that did grow up in the shadow? Have we paid enough attention to how it affected them?
Maybe not. And I don't know that I would make generational assumptions just mm-hmm. yet. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's a very small percentages of the total population, regardless of what youth or what cohort of age we're talking about. I just don't know. It'll be an interesting story for mm-hmm. us sociologically to explore who are these people. And, you know, and I think there was a sense that, you know, we won one. We got a touchdown. That's exactly right.
I heard an interview with one of them on NPR, of course, this morning, and he said that he was affected by it, that he went to school with kids whose parents died in the World Trade Center,
mm-hmm.
and that he was directly affected by it. It wasn't this kind of abstract thing that occurred out there.
I think there's a sense of desire for what we call retributive justice. You know, an awful lot of people do think eye for an eye and don't think justice has been served until. And there have been numerous studies in the United States about the desire for revenge and the desire for what we'll call retributive justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those polls show a very large portion of those who supported both the war in Afghanistan, but even more importantly, the war in Iraq, were motivated largely by a sense of, you hit us, now we're going to hit you back and hard. And so I think that is a part of the American psyche. I don't know if it's in more strong among young people than older people, but the president himself said, you know, justice has been done. And for a lot of people, that's a sense of real accomplishment. I must say, I don't think it's necessarily the case. It should excite jubilation. I have trouble being jubilant about, you know, anybody being killed, but that's just me.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. First of all, I'm glad the president reiterated the fact that we're not at war with Islam, and that goes back historically all the way to the shores of Tripoli, where in the treaty with the pirates, we said we were not at war with the Muslim faith.
Mm-hmm.
The individuals that were perpetrating the acts that we were at war with. But regarding the burial at sea and all of that, I agree with the professor there to a certain extent. But also, Obama had already said there, you know, where do you put him? Saudi Arabia doesn't want him. If you put him in Afghanistan or Pakistan, where you have governments that are very susceptible to bribery and infiltration, it wouldn't take long for someone to pay off a guard or mm-hmm. create an incident, the body's gone, and then now they've got a conspiracy theory. See, the Americans really didn't want us to have the body and incite it that way. I think when I heard the news that they had buried him at sea this morning, that's the first thing I thought was, yes, now they cannot create a shrine to him. There's no way they can rally around his body like the Soviets did with Lenin.
Mm-hmm.
The conspiracy theorists are out already saying it's not his body and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't care. You're rid of him. He's at sea. And if they want to go to the seashore and parade around, that's really fine with me. But I think they did the right thing by getting rid of the body in that way. And, of course, my understanding from Islam, what little I know, is it's very similar to Judaism, where the body is to be buried as soon as possible, generally within 24 hours.
Okay. Ed, thank you very much for your call. Rick Herman, Mershon Center for International Security Studies, parting thoughts?
Well, I think I agree with that. I hadn't thought it through as carefully as he has, as quickly. But I would think, you know, if they had brought that body back someplace, the next question on every news show would be, what are you going to do with it? And that would be a very difficult question. You wouldn't, you know, really want to desecrate it. That kind of looks like we're as barbarian as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't want to parade it around. That, again, is just barbarian. You wouldn't want to put it in any place. And so, you know, just having it buried at sea and end of it, as I say, I suppose they'll have some kind of evidence for the skeptics, whether it's a DNA match or whatever. I presume that was part of the delay in the announcement yesterday. Mm-hmm. so that we'd be absolutely sure. But we will, time will tell.
Right.
I think that's true on all these. I think the president was exactly right. This is a very major accomplishment, but no one should think it means Al-Qaeda's gone. I hope it will show over time that Al-Qaeda is not nearly as significant in the Middle East as we've thought. And the forces that are really significant in the Middle East are not going to be too much affected by this, I don't think. And they're still going to be very problematic for the United States. This does not solve the U.S. problems in the Middle East by a long shot.
Richard Herman, director of Mershon Center for International Security Studies, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Joining us now, coming up, is Sean Kay. Sean is Ohio Wesleyan University politics and government professor. Sean, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And also with us is Peter Mansour. He's General Raymond E. Mason, Chair of Military History at OSU and a retired Army colonel. Pete is going to be with us in just a second. Sean, what do you make of the way the announcement was made and the jubilation over it?
Yeah, I heard the discussion there that Rick had, which I concur with overall. I was impressed with the amount of secrecy they were able to keep on this. It does show that Washington can keep a secret pretty well, because even right up to 10:30, the networks were really still speculating on what was happening here. And I think the jubilation, I guess, is a understandable reaction. I really hope that that can be translated into something useful and positive. I think the president really hit the nail on the head when he recalled us back to that moment after 9/11, when we really were united as a nation, and just really pause for a minute and think carefully about the sacrifice that the people on that day made, that the families have made, and the service men and women, both in the military and civilian, all the way down through the police on the street. You know, they put their lives on the line for us, and the firefighters as well, and we really owe them all a debt of gratitude. So from my point of view, it's a real moment to kind of just remember the kind of service. And, you know, we're going to have debates and discussions about where to go from here and what the implications are. But, it really does show, I think, remind us that Americans can come together and do something over time that can show that we can accomplish something important. And I do think it's important that bin Laden is out of the picture. It's symbolic. But on the other hand, I also don't think it changes too much on the sort of relative on-the-ground threat. But it's an important sense of accomplishment for the United States, and it's a moment that everyone should at least take note of the service that people make on behalf of our country.
Also with us now is Peter Mansour, as I mentioned earlier, who's General Raymond E. Mason Chair of Military History at Ohio State University and a retired Army colonel. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
The timeline I've been able to get a hold of from Bloomberg News says that the CIA located the residence of the member of bin Laden's inner circle in Pakistan, in Abbottabad, Pakistan, last August. Why do these kinds of operations seem to take so long, at least to those of us on the outside?
Well, they want to be sure, because once you act on that intelligence, it's a one-shot deal. You blow the cover, you blow the compound where the person is hiding. If he's not there, then you've lost your chance to get him. So they wanted to make very, very certain that whoever it was, and they weren't sure it was bin Laden, they only knew that it was a good possibility, that whoever it was at home when they acted on the intelligence. And so they tracked this very trusted courier to this residence, and then they started to gather an intelligence profile on exactly what was there, and meanwhile planning a potential operation, you know, obviously gathering satellite photographs and so forth, so the troops could rehearse the operation as well. Interestingly enough, the courier was identified by folks that we had captured after 9/11. So, you know, as much as we like to decry Guantanamo and what goes on there, the value of the intelligence in this case from Guantanamo is pretty clear.
How different might the world be if they had achieved this goal even 9 years ago?
I think it would have been really significant. It might have prevented us from waging a very long and expensive war in Afghanistan. which ironically, one of the things that might come out of this is an opening to the administration to say, well, we were there to destroy Al-Qaeda and to bring bin Laden to justice. We've done that, and now let's start pulling out. I don't know if that'll happen, but it obviously opens up some possibilities.
Now, Sean Kay, Richard Herman said a little earlier that this does not necessarily signal the end. What do you think?
In my own assessment, the relative threat from Al-Qaeda has diminished dramatically every single day we've been farther away from 9/11. The organization evolved and changed over time. The kind of threats that they've been able to pull off were more like the subway metro attack in London and Spain and so forth. And it's pretty clear to me that their role, I agree with Rick, in the Middle East has been largely rejected by and large. But there are still other broad forces that are really significant in the region that will complicate American interests. I agree with Pete Mansour entirely about the there will be, I think, a question now about Afghanistan and where that goes. And I think that the real question then is, how do we factor Afghanistan into the larger place where the real strategic interests lie, which are going to be, in my opinion, in places like Egypt and Saudi Arabia, and how do we align U.S. policy in that regard going forward?
Pete?
I fully agree. Afghanistan, absent Al-Qaeda, is much less of a national interest to the United States than other places in the Middle East that are absolutely crucial. Egypt is probably the linchpin of Arab power in the Middle East. And then Saudi Arabia, of course, has the economic assets. So, you know, the Arab Spring, if you will, and these revolts against the dictatorships in the Arab world are going to continue because you have a mass of disaffected youth who have very few economic prospects, and they're revolting. And this isn't going to go away anytime soon, and it would be best if the United States can refocus our efforts where our interests are more crucial.
We're talking about the news that Osama bin Laden has been killed. His body has been buried at sea. The president talked about it late last night. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was on the television this morning talking about it. We're talking about it now. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Sean Kays, professor of politics and government at Ohio Wesleyan University, and also Peter Mansour. He's the General Raymond E. Mason Chair of Military History at OSU and a retired Army colonel. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
The audience heard from Issei Ali from the group Somali Unified Youth, who explained the challenges facing Somali young people in the U.S.
Somali young males in particular suffer from negative stereotyping and frequently...
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. President Obama announced last night that Osama bin Laden was killed in a U.S.-led military operation. 89.7 NPR News will have special coverage of this ongoing story throughout the day. Stay with 89.7 FM for special live coverage from NPR News. It continues at 11 o'clock this morning in just about 20 minutes. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 58 degrees in downtown Columbus. Rain expected off and on throughout the day today, mainly before 2 o'clock this afternoon. More rain tonight and a low of 44 degrees. Rain again for Tuesday, a high of just 50 degrees. There's a chance of rain Tuesday night, cloudy skies and a low of 40. And a slight chance of rain as we look ahead to Wednesday, a high of 56. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the death of Osama bin Laden, his burial at sea yesterday. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. And Lonnie from Westchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ann, and good morning to you. And I really am enjoying listening to the guests, but I just have one single problem with all of this. Mm-hmm. As an old news person, a news string, and also a point man dealing with the news, you just got too much transparency, and that's the reason why the guy was missed before. Now that he's been killed off, again, our major networks, including this station, mm-hmm. we're just putting too much out there. I mean, I believe in social networking. I believe in keeping people connected. But I think we're kind of overdoing it. We're kind of playing into their hands for building the need of getting more people involved in this. And I want your response and the guest response. And what do they feel about it?
Peter Mansour.
Do they feel it's just mm-hmm. too much news?
Peter, are we making too much of this? Is it immortalizing him just by spending so much time talking about it?
I think what talking about it has done is it's been had a very cathartic effect on the American people. You can see him celebrating at Ground Zero. You can see him celebrating in D.C. and celebrating in Mirror Lake at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think we're talking about it too much, but I think you might want to ask the caller, is he referring to maybe giving intelligence to the enemy, or is he just talking about just talking about it?
Lonnie, what were you referring to?
We are overdoing it from the news exposure to this. The president has made a statement, and if you go onto any of the news channels, local or national channels, that's the thing that's dominating the news. And to me, from my perspective, what it does is agitates the situation more. So you've got people on the left, people on the right. They have these attitudes about immortalizing this person.
Well, how would you do it differently, Lonnie? What would you do?
You tell the people what has happened, and you leave it alone. We're in this social media of notification, letting people know that, okay, this has taken place, and it's over with.
Okay.
We're just overdoing it.
Okay.
Can I say something on that?
Sure. Sean Kay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that this is not an unimportant question at all, and I say that very respectfully, because we did go through a period after 9/11, for example. I recall watching a Cleveland Browns game a couple months afterwards, and national news broke in to carry a statement by Osama bin Laden. And I thought, I don't want to hear from this guy. He's living in a cave out there somewhere. I want to get on with my life, and America needs to move forward. Why are we giving this guy a platform to say the things that he was saying? Now, that said, so the real issue to me is not that these things shouldn't be reported. We have an obligation, I think, to put them in proper perspective as well. And failure to get things into perspective can lead us into faulty policy assumptions. For example, what many think was the strategic mistake to invade Iraq, for example, in the first place. And so I think we all have an obligation to have these conversations and to put things in the proper perspective and get as much facts as we possibly can. So if we just put it out there and say nothing, then people wouldn't really have a good basis on which to make a good judgment about whether Al-Qaeda remains a threat or what are the important policy priorities that need to be addressed, as we were saying, with regard to Egypt and Saudi Arabia. So it's essential, I think. But I think there is an issue, you know, does this guy become larger than life, and is it more important than the actual reality of what's going on the ground?
Well, wasn't he already larger than life, though?
Yeah, but apparently not anymore. I mean, these people are terrorists, and terrorism can go away. I mean, it can be resolved through negotiation, as it was in Northern Ireland and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a great book by Audrey Cruz Cronin I recommend on this. There are many conditions, and one of the conditions, they can go away, as we saw with the Kurdish workers movement down in southern Turkey, was that sometimes when you do capture or kill the leader, it does real serious damage to the movement behind them. And so it's not irrelevant in the slightest. And I do think these discussions are essential to providing, you know, really essential perspectives, so that then people can make up, hopefully, their own informed judgments.
Peter Mansour, I mean, arguably, you know, Lonnie's got this. He's right. I mean, we're planning coverage pretty much throughout the day on this issue. Is it overkill?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is a huge story. Americans in the world want to hear this story, and they want to hear about other Americans' reactions to it. But Sean's right. In the longer term, after we get away from today, it's best if the news media then focuses on some really substantive coverage of what next. For instance, the number two in al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, it's unclear whether he's going to have the kind of personal charisma to hold that group together. So does al-Qaeda merely splinter now and wither away, or does it morph into something else? Those are some very interesting conversations that hopefully analysts will look at going forward.
And that's an important point, too, because Ayman al-Zawahiri really was the operational mastermind, of as we know it, of al-Qaeda, and bin Laden was a much more larger mythical figure. But Ayman al-Zawahiri is not sort of a household name in America, but he's still out there, you know. So there are these leadership issues that do remain.
We have an email from Kelly, writes, I would surmise that killing bin Laden as opposed to capturing him sends a pointed message to any sympathizers that the U.S. presents absolutely no equivocation in terms of eliminating anyone who is associated with terrorism. Could that be possibly part of the message?
You know, Anne, I really think that, and I don't know that the orders were to kill him. Mm-hmm. It was probably kill or capture, but his death, I think, is preferable to a show trial back here in the United States, which would have been just a zoo. And burying his body at sea, you know, prevents there from being a grave and therefore a shrine to Islamic militants, or a grave that could be vandalized by people who hate him. Much like Hitler, he will disappear from sight and into the history books.
John in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Ann. I'd like to ask you and your guests, from the point of view of the fundamental interests of the people in the Middle East, what has happened as a result, or what might happen as a result of bin Laden's death? I think we talk about how our American interests are affected or promoted or not. And I think the fundamental question, more fundamental question, is how about the interests of the people who live there?
Hmm. Well, I'll take a quick stab at
Sean?
That first. I just don't think bin Laden ever had those people's interests there's an echo there. I don't think he had his interest or their interest at heart. I think he was about power and manipulation so that's one first thing I'd say. If you go way back and study bin Laden, his primary obsession was always about Saudi Arabia and the Saudi Peninsula. That's still an unresolved long-term strategic issue. But I do want to say very quickly that I actually think much more significant than the killing of bin Laden, as important as that is the revolutions in places like Egypt and Bahrain and so forth, which really undermines some of the basic idea of anybody governing with unchecked authority, which is exactly the kind of power that bin Laden wanted to impose on people there. So the real question is, how well will we foster and be on the right side of history with regard to that change? And that's what we don't know, is how it's going to play out, which is why I just go back to that basic question of Egypt and Saudi Arabia, and how well will we make adjustments relative to the regimes that we supported and have been very close to for a very, very long time.
Peter, Mansoor?
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is that in terms of the people on the ground, I think their lives, they might not improve, but at least they will have lives to live. Osama bin Laden was a mass murderer of Muslims, and he is now dead, and that, I think, is a good thing for the entire world.
Okay, thanks for that call from John in Westerville. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call and join the conversation, we have about 9 minutes left of the show. My guests are Sean Kay of Ohio Wesleyan University, where he teaches politics and government, and also Peter Mansoor, a military history professor at OSU and a retired Army colonel as well. Caller from Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I feel that this is a vindication of what I have been preaching about how to deal with the terrorism. You cannot deal with it full force. The even superpowers, war machine cannot bring about your objective, and the terrorism has to be carefully fought with a good intelligence shared by all who oppose it. Also through the diplomatic, economic, political avenues available to us. This is not, the terrorism cannot be defeated by the military force alone. And this is what this wonderful news of his Osama bin Laden's demise means to me. And I'd like to hear what your guest said.
Sean Kay?
I think that you'd find a lot of agreement on that with people in the military. I defer to Pete on that, but I do think that there is a general sense that the military tool is a useful and sharp edge, but it's limited in terms of, you know, it can't work well unless you have good intelligence, for example, and there are larger socioeconomic issues that go to play throughout all these regions and political, et cetera. So it's one of many tools that can be effective, but under the right circumstances. And it may vary from place to place and condition to condition. One of the real big questions I will have going forward is it'll be really interesting to hear out over time what as I think Rick Kerman said, what's the backstory here on what went on in Pakistan. You know, why was he able to live for so long, apparently, mm-hmm. in this large compound that's actually only, a few hundred meters from an Army or police training barracks facility. And, you know, so those are kind of interesting questions going forward. And on the other hand, I think Pakistan put out a statement today at the UN that made very clear that they saw this as an important thing for the world, that the Taliban and al-Qaeda have effectively declared war on Pakistan, and that's an important point. So that intelligence sharing between these countries does remain vital as this kind of rolls out down the road.
Peter?
Well, I would agree with the caller. Because our military is so capable, we have a tendency to overuse it, and particularly the sort of 90-degree strategic turn we took going into Iraq,
mm-hmm.
We lost focus on al-Qaeda, and now we've regained that. And so I think going forward, I would agree, you know, these massive interventions with ground forces into the Islamic world need to stop, and we need to be, we need to go about this with a scalpel and not a sledgehammer.
Given the intelligence that was involved in this this kind of an operation, is it possible that it's not an isolated situation, that there's other things rolling out even as we speak?
Well, it'd be nice if we had the same kind of intelligence on Zawahiri, because
mm-hmm.
if you got him, now you've taken out, since 9/11, the top three al-Qaeda leaders, and it's not clear that there's another person with Bin Laden's charisma and Zawahiri's managerial capability to run the organization, and that would be, I think, really, really significant.
Sean, was that?
I have nothing to add to that. I agree completely. Yeah.
Joe in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on what al-Qaeda represents and what Bin Laden said at the beginning of his campaign against the West. Which was that he wanted to engage the Western powers, America, in a war whose front was so broad that it could not be contained. Since we have eliminated Osama bin Laden, maybe we can get to the point where we don't play into the hands of these radical people who represent a small portion of Islam and not the whole Middle East, as people seem to be assuming. And I think this is a good opportunity for America to focus on our own fathers and sons and daughters who have been damaged in this war and in this extreme reaction by the United States. And maybe we can start taking care of those who have served, who have been neglected over the past number of years at this point in time. It's also a good time for America to declare that we throw down the sword as well. I would like to give you the words of Martin Luther King, who said, a nation that engages and spends more on military spending than it does on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Martin Luther King said that 1 year before he was assassinated. So I want to thank your panel there mm-hmm. for their service, and I'll get off the phone. Thank you, Joe.
Peter Mansour, I mean, is this the sort of thing where you can stand down from something like this? And
well, I just have two things to say. One, Al-Qaeda cannot be bargained with. They have a very extreme political agenda, and they are out to kill Americans and indeed all Westerners if they need to in order to achieve it. So it would be nice if we could do some sort of nonviolent resistance to Al-Qaeda, but it's not possible. Now, I agree with him that we shouldn't be doing wholesale interventions in the Islamic world either. Like I said, we should go after this, about this with a scalpel and not a sledgehammer. I just want to correct something that the caller said, though, mm-hmm. or that he implied, and that is our military spending. We spend far more as a nation on social programs and entitlements than we do on military spending. Military spending is about half of the discretionary budget, but only about a quarter of the budget in total. So the idea that we are spending more than half of our budget on military things, I think, is incorrect.
I don't have a lot of time, but I did want to read an email from Jessica before I say thanks to my guest, Sean Kay from Ohio Wesleyan University, and also Peter Mansour from Ohio State University. It's from Jessica. She writes, I am currently a doctoral student at Ohio State, but I was 14 years old when 9/11 occurred. I watched from the windows of my high school as the Twin Towers burned 20 miles away, consoled a classmate as we tried to figure out whether his father made it out of the 10th, 104th floor in time. He did not. I wondered if I would ever see my New York Fire Department father again, who fortunately survived. In the days, weeks, months, and even years since, my generation attended more funerals and memorial services than some ever do in a lifetime. So this moment of Bin Laden's death is a moment for us to acknowledge the justice that has finally been served. It is a moment for us to celebrate and honor the people who guided us through those incredibly difficult times. We will be the generation who deals with the consequence of his death, and I believe we are more than prepared to face that challenge. Thanks again to my guests, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.